Welcome to Innovative Interactions, a show by Resemble AI where we talk with makers, tinkerers, and creative people to find out about the tools, tricks, insights, and techniques they use to bring their best ideas to life. Today we're talking to Sam Crowther, the Executive Creative Director of A Million Ads, a personalized audio ad studio for brands like McDonald's, Adidas, and Peak. We'll talk about the history of audio ads, lasting fundamentals of connecting to your customers and consumers through audio, and the time he met Ricky Gervais 20 years ago when he realized that podcasting was the thing of the future. Let's welcome Sam. Thanks for being here. You've had a long and successful career in creative marketing. How have the fundamentals of creative marketing progressed in the last couple of decades?
Good question. I think the fundamentals haven't radically changed. I grew up with I love the phrase, "The medium is the message" by Marshall McLuhan from a very famous book called Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man, that anybody who studied marketing kind of gets rammed down their throat. But it stands true because he talked about the global village. And I think that's what we're seeing, is we're seeing the idea that you can talk to somebody on the other side of the globe as if they are next to you in a small village. And that's true. The fundamentals haven't changed. We're still human beings, and human beings evolved over a very, very long period. And it's only been recently that we suddenly have digital media, but that has been the radical change in the last few years. So everything has become digitized, but that means that as marketeers, you can't forget the fundamentals of the human being. And there's still the psychology of influencing people that has been refined over millennia still apply. But it just means that the craft and the delivery of digital means that you can be more specific to people, and you can be more personalized, and you know exactly who those people are on a grand scale as well.
What processes do you go through when you're crafting an audio ad to market?
Well, the first thing we do is the briefing process. So a client comes to us who wants to communicate in that space. And so we need to understand, you know, more about the product, that brand, that product, what they want to do. So the briefing process is the starting point, I would say. And from that brief, we then try and work out with audio, it's about simplicity of message, because you can't make a complex message very easily in audio. It needs to be quite a simple one. So we try to break it down to a very, very simple key human fact and come up with an idea, like an idea that might persuade a listener to take note of that message that brand wants to come out with. So the moment that we get that idea, then that, as a creative, you start to think about the voices in your head. So you imagine someone saying that script. So you end up writing a script like you would do for a computer game or whatever, and you imagine that character and who that person is. So then you start casting. So you need to have the right characters. You might want to express values within music, obviously. I mean, ads quite often have music, and they're very, very powerful because of it. And so we then listen to lots of music, and we try and find the music that fits with that ad, that communication, or that brand, if they don't have their own sonic branding, that is. And then it's the recording. So once we've got that script ready, it's about recording a voice, editing it, loading it into our system, and setting it up. You know, that's the kind of difference with sort of dynamic, is that you're thinking how an idea can actually use data to enhance that message.
What impact are you seeing that podcast ads are having on the market?
Well, podcasting's fantastic. I mean, podcasting's been around for a very, very long time, actually. I mean, I remember in a previous life, I worked for a commercial radio group, and I actually worked for a company on the same floor. My creative studio was of XFM. So XFM was a London radio station, an indie music station. And it had somebody called Ricky Gervais, who was the head of speech originally on XFM. And then he kind of left, and then he came back in 2001. And I used to share a voice booth with a producer called Carl Pilkington. And Carl was the producer for Ricky as he came back. And I remember Carl saying to me in the kitchen when we were having, like, making a cup of tea or whatever, he's saying, "Sam, you've got to listen to this Ricky. He's just so funny. It's hilarious." And I said to my girlfriend, who's now my wife, "We've got to listen to this show." It's Saturday morning, and we were driving to a supermarket, and it was literally, from the first few links, it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. It was just hilarious. And that was the first radio show. And I went back on the Monday, And I said, I've got to edit this down and send it out to some ad agencies and say, look, this, you guy, you've got to listen to this. This is amazing. This guy is so funny. And so I burnt 5 CDs to 5 of the biggest media buyers in the UK and sent it off. And the next week I got requests for like 20 CDs. And the week after that, about 100. And it was like, oh God, we can't keep burning CDs. This is not good for the environment or anything. So I actually asked the tech team if we could have access to the FTP site. Do you remember those? FTP site. And I loaded an MP3 and it was a laborious process. But then we sent a link out and said, look, you can download this show because so many people were interested. That was listened to by The Guardian. They re-recorded those podcasts and it became Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant and Carl Pilkington became the world's biggest podcast. Now, the reason I told you that kind of long-winded story is because podcasting is the fundamental of it is audio on demand. And just on a radio station in London, that isn't broad enough that at a particular time on a Saturday morning, someone like Ricky Gervais deserves a much bigger audience. And the reason why we love it and why I was sitting in that car, not getting out and going do my shopping, because it was so engaging. It was so intimate. It was so funny. And that's what we love. And that's what podcasting is all about. So when you talk about the impact of podcast ads now, you know, almost 20 years later, yes, it's come. They went quiet and then it's come back. But this is the fundamental. We love on-demand audio that entertains us, wows us. When you watch, you know, some of these true crime or listen to these true crime podcasts, that intimacy, personal trustworthiness is what podcast ads do. And radio's always had an element of that anyway, but they have a huge impact because they are so trustworthy and intimate. And now you can do it at scale. So you've got Spotify, you've got programmatic inventory going into them. And suddenly you can actually, you love this medium, but you can actually reach it on a massive scale. And you can do personalized ads within that as well. So a lot of the inventory that we serve our ads into is podcasting.
With programmatic ads becoming more practical, as you just mentioned, how do you feel consumers are and will react to personalization, such as hearing their name in an ad?
Yeah, that's the ultimate one, isn't it? We there's only a few publishers that even have first name data or have even used it. Most what we talk about when we talk about personalization, we talk about two things, and we talk about human attention, because these two areas are the things that drive human attention. Well, there are three, really. So the first one is actually things that are a threat to us. So if you're out on a street and you hear a loud bang, your brain is immediately looks to the source of that sound and says, is that a gunshot or is it a car backfiring? That's the number one thing that drives attention, is a threat to us. The second thing is personal relevance. So when you talk about name, you're talking about Cherry and Broadbent, very famous psychologists that talked about the cocktail party effect. And they talked about this occasion where you're at a busy, noisy cocktail party. Someone mentions your name in a conversation next to you and you get drawn to it, even though you weren't listening to it originally. And what that proved is something called selective attention. So this is what our brains are brilliant at, that they take in enormous amounts of information, but then they filter and decide if it's important or not. So actually your name is the top of the iceberg of what is personally relevant to you. So it's your name. It can be where you came from, where you grew up, the town that you grew up, the football team that you support, the music that you maybe listened to when you were a teenager, or the track that you had as your first dance at a wedding. Those are incredibly personal sounds that will always trigger that personal relevance recall. So yes, everyone hearing their name in an ad will drive people nuts, but using music that you love from an era that you love, you might not think consciously about it, but it will make you feel closer to that brand because of that personal relevance. So you're not going to hear lots of ads with your name in, but you might suddenly notice that you like advertising generally more because it's fitting who you are, because that is data that we know about you. So we can put messages that are relevant to the city that you're in. So you only hear those. The music that you love, you know, it's because of the music that you play on at different times of day, different weeks, you know, your mood and reflecting that. So, and the third thing, sorry, I talked about personal relevance. The third thing is contextual relevance. So contextual relevance, it operates in a similar way, but on a much shorter term turnaround, as in it's raining outside. I'm going to need to get an umbrella. You know, so it's the things that change on a day-to-day basis. And if you're going on a road and the radio says, oh, we've got problems on the whatever motorway or the freeway, then you're going to go, did they just say there were problems? Because I've got to go there today. So it's slightly different than personal relevance. But all of this stuff, all of the, everything I've just talked about personal and contextual relevance is what we then inform the creative that you hear. So it can take into account where you are, the weather, the device you're listening on, how you're connected to the internet or what have you, the time of day, the day of week, all of that stuff. And then the personal stuff is the stuff that the publishers might have about you. And that could be your age, your gender, the last tracks that you were listening to, you know, the slightly more personal stuff. But as guardians of that data, they will not be throwing it around willy-nilly, sort of like, you know what I mean? They're going to be quite precious about it because it's very powerful stuff. And particularly your name, yeah. I mean, there could be some really cool applications, of course. It'd be interesting to see how they are applied.
Yeah, one of the things that I was thinking about and we've been talking about, when even if it comes across as like, oh, I know that they're probably using technology for my name, it's still the same thing with email marketing, right? Or if it's cheesy or, you know, they know it's a technology behind it. What you just said, though, being at the cocktail party, your name is going to trigger that.
And also there's two ways. I mean, we take in information subconsciously or consciously. So what the cocktail party effect proved, that actually you take in information subconsciously and then it says, hold on, this is a priority. This is your name. Now, there's two ways as a creative, I could write a scenario with your name in, Matt, because I could write it in as in, hey, Matt, I know you're called Matt, so I'm going to use it and I'm going to engage you by saying I know this about you and use it. Now, that's conscious, very conscious. I know this. I'm telling you and I'm engaging you. But what about subconscious use? So what if we had a scenario where I was writing an ad where there were two characters and one character was called Sam and one of them was called Matt? You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. But suddenly it's still your name, but then you're like, hold on, why are they using it? Well, you wouldn't know that they're using it because of that, but it still has the cocktail party effect. And imagine if that voice that represented Matt was actually, you know, like a famous person that you admired or something, you know, like, I don't know, whoever, like a voiceover that you were like, wow. But all you what you don't realize is actually that voiceover, we got them to record 500 names and it took about 25 minutes to do that. So actually we could reach maybe in terms of how old you are, I don't know exactly, but you know, 30, people who are 30s, 40s or what have you, that you can reach about 65, 70% of a Western UK, US name population with the top 500 names. So you have a long tail with names. And so what you do is you reach hundreds of thousands of Matts across America. You know what I mean? So it can be quite an efficient way.
Part of that is, how do you really rise above the noise, right? Especially with audio, one of the bigger challenges is that you may be walking, you may be driving. And so the call to action at the end of it's a much bigger ask, right? Because I know some of the best audio ads that I've listened to, they make me want to get my phone out, use my notepad on the iPhone and write it down to check it out later, right? So how do you create ads in this space and collateral that people want to engage with and remember to the point where it becomes worth the investment that these people then actually take you up on the call to action?
Yeah. Well, the big thing with call to action is that most of what people are listening through, like you said, is a phone. And at home, it could be a smart speaker of some sort, or if not, it could be your laptop. And they're all smart speakers, essentially. And the power of that means that you can essentially not get your phone out to make a note, that you could actually talk to the ad potentially. And that's what is being trialed at the moment. So talk to me or explain more about this service or this product or this game or whatever it is. If you feel engaged, you don't have to, speaking is the quickest and simplest and easiest way of then saving the information or asking for more information or show me that video on the phone or what have you, it can be. And that's what's interesting, because I think in the next few years, that's going to be the thing that really, really sort of drives it. Not that every ad needs a call to action in that sense. There's still a real importance to building brands through sort of emotional positioning and all of that sort of stuff. You know, triggering a conversation is a fascinating way to think about it. So if you think about ads that are more engaging because they understand you as a person, so they're only putting the products that are more relevant to you, and the message engages you better because it understands you, then you are probably going to be more likely to then maybe speak to it and ask for more information.
How do you identify triggers happening in culture that brands need to be aware of when you're consulting with them?
I think creatives naturally expose themselves to a lot of culture. I think to become a creative person, generally, you engage with film and music and podcasts, and you're a sponge for culture. And so, not that you can do everything all the time, but you already have very good reference. Most creative people have very good references for culture. And so that kind of defines how you end up being like that. And because that's a real skill within itself. And it's the same with all sorts of creators in different media. But and you try and consciously do that. But then there are huge things like a pandemic that have a huge effect. So you think about the pandemic of this year and the effect that that has had on the type of marketing that has gone out. And a lot of the scripts that I've had to write in the, you know, this year have had to reflect that, because there's a new reality to people being at home, people engaging in different ways with media. They're listening to a lot of digital audio, which is fantastic for us. But we need to reference that in the way that we talk about these products and services. So there are things that are a big and they're unavoidable. And then there's other things, little nuances. And we try and make build teams that are as diverse and inclusive as possible, because there's no point me trying to write around young women's issues. I'm even though I can look up those issues, it's not the same as living them. And so it's very important that any creative team, you have a really good mixture of all sorts of people within that team.
And finally, where do you see the practice of audio marketing going in the next decade?
It's going to be exciting, isn't it? I mean, there's so much going on in this space at the moment. I think what's going to happen is there will be this move, and there is this move to more personalization. That doesn't mean that you won't hear and see broadcast messages that everybody sees, because I still think there's a huge power in everybody seeing the same message for certain launches and certain things. But on the back of that, there will be increases in dynamic personalization. And I, when you sort of think about it, I think about the film, Spike Jonze film, Her. I guess you know all about that. So the Scarlett Johansson plays that AI voice, Samantha. It's kind of creepy, because you realize what's going on is that the artificial intelligence is working out, you know, the main character, Joaquin Phoenix's character, and exactly what he wants to hear. And whether we go that far, I'm not really sure, but that's the way it will go. So it's not, I don't think it's going to be blunt and brutal personalization with every ad shouting out, Matt, buy this, Matt, buy that, because that wouldn't show the intelligence that we can use through artificial intelligence, which would then inform how we should talk to you. And what I'm fascinated in is things like the psychology of influence. There's people like Robert Cialdini, who does really amazing work on the weapons of influence, and using that to inform the creative that you hear. So there can be different approaches to trying to persuade you to use a service or buy a product. And if it hasn't worked the first time, then you should alter that message. I mean, young children learn this at about the age of 3, and all human beings do. So if a 3-year-old wants an ice cream, they ask their mum or their dad in a certain way. And if they don't get their way, they change it, because they are learned from a very early age. They try a different approach. And, you know, and I'd say that my little daughter does that. So she's like, oh, dad, I really want ice cream. I go, no, you've had enough sweets or whatever today. And then she'll come back and then she'll go, I'm sure I saw my brothers, they've had an ice cream. And I'm like, no, I'm not buying into that. And then she'll come back and goes, dad, you look really hot. Do you want an ice cream? And, you know, and so she twists it around and you're like, well, hats off. But that's what we do as humans. You know, we experiment, we change, we test, that's how we do marketing, advertising campaigns, all these digital marketing, that's what they do. They refine, they alter, they change, they learn, and then they redo that process again. And so when you think about Samantha and Scarlett Johansson, the ads that you hear hopefully will reflect which ones worked for you last time. So you end up listening, hearing ads, being exposed to ads that have taken your behavior into account in a slightly more advanced way than just showing you a product that you bought on Amazon maybe 3 weeks ago.
Awesome. Thank you, Sam, for spending this time with us. This is extremely valuable for everybody listening. Audio is not only the future, it's happening now. Anybody can check out amillionads.com to see more of your guys' work and your blog, learn about what is going on, what you guys are thinking about. So thank you for taking the time this morning.
Pleasure. Nice to speak to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Innovative Interactions Podcast. We really enjoyed talking to Sam about personalization and creativity in audio. For more tips from creatives and innovators, or if you'd like to reach out to us, visit resemble.ai. And if you have a guest you'd like to hear from, reach out to us for suggestions at podcast@resemble.ai. Thank you for listening. Catch you next time.